Welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a program dedicated to informing you about organizations that serve our community and how you can get involved with them. Here's your host, Chris Evans.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on the Upstate. My name is Chris Evans. Today, my guest is Chris Manley, the Executive Director of Rebuild Upstate. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You're quite welcome. It's always my pleasure to have guests like this in the studio. This is actually a lot of fun. I don't mean to digress, but doing radio and interviews like this is a lot of fun for me. I really kind of lucked into this job, so yeah, it's nice awesome. To have somebody in the studio that I can talk to every week. Rebuild Upstate. I'm going to ask you the first question that I normally ask my guests, which is, what do you guys do and who do you do it for?
Yeah. So we repair homes for low-income families. And to kind of expound on that a little bit more, we work with families that have gone – many times their families, just like, you know, yours and mine, that have gone through some kind of situation, whether it was a loss of income or a medical illness or something like that, and their home has fallen into disrepair. They've got a leaking roof. They have a floor that's falling through. They don't have safe entry and exit way out of the home. In some cases, it's because of a disability. In other cases, it's literally a porch or steps going up to their front door that are rotted through and about to cave in.
Wow.
And so that's who we serve.
Now, I personally have experienced a loss with my home recently, and I'm not going to solicit any services from you or anything. Sure. But my point is that I have had an experience recently where I've had to deal with this kind of thing. And one of the things that I know is that I've had to have a great deal of contact with our insurance company in order to get the mess cleaned up and the property restored to the way that it was. My understanding is that homeowners in South Carolina are required to have homeowners insurance. And I mean, I don't know if that's actually true, but my understanding is that it is. Suffice to say that most homeowners are going to have homeowners insurance. Is that something that you guys work with, or are these people that are suffering losses without any way to cover it?
In most cases, these are families that they're suffering losses either where there's no way to cover it. There wasn't an impending event that happened.
I gotcha.
That, you know, that caused it to become in disrepair. There wasn't a storm that came through that caused their roof to leak or something the insurance is going to cover. And so a number of the families we serve, they have insurance. A lot of these things are deferred maintenance that they didn't have either the physical wherewithal or the financial ability to make those repairs.
Okay. So that actually was the term I was going to use, deferred maintenance. This is just something that's been maybe a minor issue to start with, but has gotten worse and worse over time and now has become a major problem.
Exactly.
Gotcha. So there are any number of organizations here in the Upstate and across the country and probably around the world that do similar kinds of work. What sets Rebuild Upstate apart in terms of the kind of work that you guys do?
Sure. There are a lot of organizations in the affordable housing space.
Right.
In fact, I was one of the two people that started the Greenville Affordable Housing Coalition. And really, that was an effort. We need each other. We need, you know, I've got friends and colleagues that their focus is building new housing for home ownership. I've got colleagues that are building new housing for rental for low-income families. We need all of that. You know, quite frankly, there's some people that call us that need help. Their house is really we can try to put a Band-Aid on it,
right,
but it's not going to make financial sense for us to rebuild the house. They really need a better housing situation. And so we need those organizations here to build new housing. Likewise, there are a lot of people that if they don't get their house repaired now, give it 3, 4, 5 years, they're going to be at that point where they can't live in the house anymore, and
right,
they're either going to be homeless or they're going to have to rely on some other organization to help give them housing. And so we need each other. You know, we're helping to kind of solve this problem of how do we make sure everybody has a safe and healthy place to live. You know, for some people, let's keep them in their existing home. And that's certainly a more economical opportunity to do that. In some cases, we do need new housing. And
yeah,
so we got to work together. And that's been our focus.
I have spoken with a number of organizations over the years that address homelessness in one way or another. And it really is kind of a problem here in the Upstate, especially in Greenville. I don't know if it's just my perception, but it seems like it's been getting worse over the years. And you're right that there is a need for that kind of thing. And it seems like the work that you guys do is sort of coming at it from the other angle in terms of helping to prevent homelessness by making sure that people can stay in their homes.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of people with the homes that they're in, they may not be in the best shape, but for many of the families we serve, it's the biggest asset they have. as a family. Yeah. It's worth more than any amount of money they have in the bank. And so if we can preserve that asset for them, one, we're helping to preserve their financial well-being for the future, but we're also helping to keep them in place. You know, a lot of the families we serve, they've lived in these homes for many, many years. They're part of the fabric of the neighborhood they live in, and it's best to keep them there. They know who the neighbors that should be there, and they know the cars that really shouldn't be in their neighborhood. They're the ones looking out for each other, looking out for each other's kids, you know, in the neighborhood. We want to keep them where they are, and it's not only cost effective to do that. The average home we serve, we can repair a home for about $4,000. The cost of a new home to construct, even if you're using volunteers, I keep hearing these numbers somewhere between $100,000 and $120,000. And so if we can keep people in their home and repair the home for $4,000 or $5,000, that's a much better investment than having to go raise $100,000 to build a new house. And so, you know, and it's preserving the existing, you know, existing house that we have here. Yeah. It's keeping it affordable, not just for this family, but hopefully for other families down the road.
Well, and speaking of making the investment in affordable housing that you were mentioning earlier, it's not just the people who live in the house that you're helping, because we've seen any kind of disrepair or dilapidation in one house is going to affect the property values of surrounding houses and neighborhoods. So that's something that maintenance like that is going to have a much wider spread effect than it might first occur.
Definitely. You
know? Let's talk about the history of the organization, because I learned before the program, as we were speaking before the program, that you actually founded Rebuild Upstate.
Yes.
Congratulations. Well done. I've had any number of executive directors and presidents and CEOs of organizations, but it's not typical that I get a founder in here. This is kind of an opportunity. How long has Rebuild Upstate been around?
So we got started in 2006. It was in August of that year. And to kind of tell you a little bit of the story of kind of how we got into this, we didn't start the organization with the intent of doing home repair in the Upstate. In fact, we actually were a group of college students that had been going down to New Orleans in the New Orleans metro area post-Katrina.
That sounds right. Okay.
doing
post-Katrina. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, doing hurricane repairs and repairs to rebuilding homes down there.
I was going to say, there's any number of reasons that college students would go to New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This was one of the ones that you can be a little bit more proud of the students enough. That were going down there. But we had students, we had community members, and we were you know, really just trekking all the way down there, because this is a community that, you know, over a million people lived in that had been flooded out of their homes. And even a year after Katrina in August of 2006, we've been going down there for a year. But a year later, there's still hundreds of thousands of homes that are still uninhabitable. And
you know,
so
I was going to say, I remember there's a program that I like watching. It's a British car show called Top Gear, and they did a special where they actually drove across the southern United States and wound up in New Orleans. That was their destination, and it was about a year after Katrina, and it was just amazing to see the shots of the devastation even a year later. I mean, you'd think that typically when something goes wrong, you know that it takes time to restore everything and get everything back into working order and back sort of the way it was, at least as much as you can. And with a hurricane, that's going to take longer just because it's such widespread damage. But even this was just astounding to see how much had not been fixed yet.
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And there was still so much need. And so that's really what led to the start of the organization. And we had just, I mean, we had been taking trips kind of under different auspices for a year up to that point, and people were so excited about going down there. We said, well, you know, we got to continue this. But at the same time, we also started to have to buy materials for a lot of these homes because they were getting settlements from insurance and stuff like that for $13,000. Well, the materials alone to rebuild their house would cost upwards of $50,000. And so they needed help making this happen. And so we started the organization really with a desire to raise the funds needed to do that and to go help. Well, we've been doing, you know, that as an organization for a few months. We've been going down there for over a year at this point. And I got a call from a local pastor in Clemson. And he said, you know, Chris, hey, I know this family. They live kind of on the outskirts of town. They've been in this house for a long time. It's a mom. It's her two adult sons and then her granddaughter living in this home. You know, she's not too old. She works.
Right.
One of her sons works. The other son's trying to find a job. They're working hourly wage jobs, you know, close to minimum wage. He said, we found out their roof's leaking, and it's leaking in a few places. They've got buckets and pots and pans all over the house.
Right.
And he said, I think I found someone who can pay for the materials to re-roof the house. They said, I've seen pictures of y'all doing this down in New Orleans. Do you think y'all could do this? And I said, well, we've never done that before, but sure. A roof's a roof.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's in New Orleans or whether it's in Clemson. So let's give it a shot. And so we sent out an email. I needed about 10, maybe 12 people to show up that day to re-roof this house. It was January the 27th. It was super cold outside. It was sub-freezing when I woke up that morning. We had 3 dozen people show up.
Wow.
To re-roof this house. We actually couldn't fit more than 10 or 12 on the roof for fear the roof would, you know, we'd hit a spot and they'd actually fall in. And so, you know, we not only re-roofed this house, but we replaced windows. The little girl's room that was living in this house, she was at elementary school aged, and she had 2 broken windows in her room. She actually hadn't been able to sleep in her own room in about 6 months because it was open to the elements. She had to sleep in the living room on the couch because there were broken windows in her room, and the family couldn't afford to replace the windows. And so that experience really kind of led us to doing more projects here because we said, hey, we can't take trips down to New Orleans constantly. We're taking them spring break, fall break, during the summer, during Christmas break and things like that. But let's use the weekends while we're here to try to repair some homes here. And the more we got into this, the more we did it, the word started to spread. I mean, it's amazing when you repair somebody's house. You may not meet a lot of their neighbors that day, but then, you know, they're sitting on their porch the next week and people start coming by. Yeah. Hey, what were all those people doing? What were those cars in your driveway last week? And then they find out about it and they give us a call. And we started hearing more and more people that had this need, that needed help. And I'm from the upstate. I grew up here. It's home. I had no idea there were people that were living in these kind of conditions that, quite frankly, you and I would call, you know, substandard. I mean, it's not a safe or healthy place to have a family.
Even squalorous.
Exactly. It's not good. I mean,
I was going to say, it's one thing to feel called to help, you know, a place as devastated as New Orleans was after Katrina, especially after Katrina, because that was really, really bad. Oh, yeah. It's one thing to feel called to help people like that, you know, that are not in your community. It's another thing to realize that there are people that are suffering in your community nearby that also need that kind of help. I was, when I was young, I went to a mission camp that is a very similar mission, actually. It's called Sockahatchee. A lot of people may be familiar with it. And we kept going down to sort of the Midlands and coastal areas, some of the small towns down there, you know, that just are not as prosperous. And we would do the same kind of work, fix roofs and replace windows and doors and floors and, you know, just generally fix people's houses up so that they could continue to live in them. And then it was after I had left the program, I had graduated high school, they started offering camps here in the upstate in Greenville and Spartanburg. And I was like, man, I never even knew that there were people around here that are like that. It's easy to miss, you know, and it shouldn't be.
I like to call it's really an unseen, a hidden need that's in our community. I mean, I tell people all the time, these are not homes that are getting featured in the newspaper or on the Festival of Homes or, you know, they're not hosting dinner parties in their house for everybody to come in and see it. It's really, and you can't tell from the road. I was working with a group at Furman about trying to identify, you know, how many homes are in disrepair, in the upstate. And, you know, they were asking about, you know, can we look at, and we've got Google Images and Google Earth, and we can see the roofs of houses. Can we just look at those and tell? And I said, you know, you'd be amazed at how nice some of these roofs look from the outside, and yet there's still water coming through them. It's really hard to tell from the outside looking in what the condition is inside the house. A lot of the homes, sometimes we'll drive up to and our volunteers will get there, and the house looks pretty good from the outside, but then you walk in and you see a big hole in the floor.
Yeah.
And you realize the outside doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I had an experience one time. I was renting an apartment and we had a leak develop and told the landlord, and they came out and had a roofing company come out and put an entirely new roof on, and it still leaked. and they tried to figure out what it was and eventually traced it to the chimney. There was a separation between the chimney where the water was getting in, but it was amazing that they had come out and done all of this work to completely replace the roof and it still leaked. And so you're absolutely right. Even something that looks brand new could have a flaw in it.
Oh, yeah.
So that was your first house in the upstate that you guys worked on.
Correct. And to the early January 2007.
2007. Was the first home. So 13 years ago almost.
Yeah.
And from there, it just became rebuild upstate. You guys recognized the need. and kept doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, for the first few years, we were doing a lot both in New Orleans and here, and we were really trying to balance both. And I think it was around end of 2010, early 2011, we started talking with some partners in New Orleans. They were kind of back on their feet. I mean, when we first started going to New Orleans, I don't want to say the nonprofits weren't existing down there, but you have to keep in mind, nonprofits are staffed by people that live there. Well, when everybody's houses were flooded, the staff can't live there anymore. Many of them had gone to Houston or Atlanta or Dallas or other places around the Southeast to live, because it'd be 6 months to several years until they could actually get back in their home. And so we were meeting a critical need in the beginning. Over time, we really got to a point where we said, let's turn over the relationships that we have to the local organizations here. We still had a number of groups that were interested in continuing to come down to New Orleans. And so really we transitioned a lot of those relationships to organizations that were down there, boots on the ground. And we said, we need to focus here. You know, there hasn't been a hurricane here. We haven't gotten national media attention in upstate South Carolina for the quality of homes we have. But this is a need that we need to fill. We keep getting more and more calls. Our waiting list keeps growing and growing and growing. We got to focus here. We got to take care of the neighbors in our own own neck of the woods. And so that's really what led us to focusing exclusively on the upstate and kind of led us to where we are right now.
I got to say, it's refreshing to have somebody in the studio whose organization name includes the word upstate as opposed to Greenville. Not that there aren't plenty of good organizations in Greenville, and the organizations that serve Greenville will frequently serve the upstate at large as well, but they're called something something of Greenville. Yeah. You guys are Rebuild Upstate. How much of the upstate do you guys serve?
Sure. So we focus our efforts on four counties.
Okay.
We serve in Oconee, Pickens, Anderson, and Greenville counties, really the western upstate.
Yeah, sort of northwestern corner of the state. Oh, yeah. If somebody needs your services, we've talked about that, and you already mentioned that you guys have a waiting list, what do they need to do?
Yeah, so the best way to get in touch with us when you need help is to go to our website.
Okay.
It's rebuildupstate.org, and you can look on our website, and there are buttons up at the very top, and one of them says need help, and you can click on that button. That's going to take someone straight to information about what it looks like for us to serve someone, what the process looks like just to help a homeowner get familiar with what that looks like, and then it also has a link to our application. The best way to get into our system is to fill out the application online. As soon as an application is submitted online, it goes straight into our database. We get all the information at once, and we can begin figuring out how we might be able to serve you. We also have a phone number for those that may not have internet access. It's our helpline. It's also on our website that people could call. And what they do there is they leave a message, and then we've got a team of volunteers that work many, many evenings and weekends and things like that to call back. Call our families back that call in, and they're basically collecting that information. But depending on the time of year, depending on, you know, right now it's starting to get really cold outside.
Right. Really cold.
Yeah, really cold. We'll get a lot of calls all at once. And so, I mean, it may take several weeks to get a call back.
Yeah.
And so it takes a little bit longer using the phone method. The website's really the best way.
Well, and just in case people need that phone number, it is 864-603-2708. Again, that's 864-603-2708. Again, the number is available on the website, rebuildupstate.org, which is a better way in general to get information, to get help, as you mentioned, the need help button right up there. We were also talking before the program that you guys are coming up on having finished your 1,000th home.
Correct. We're hoping
that's fantastic. That's a milestone right there.
Yeah, it should be coming up before the end of the year. We're going to repair our 1,000th home, which is a huge milestone, huge accomplishment for us. But at the same time, we kind of look at that and we're going to celebrate. We're going to get really excited about it. But we've also got to keep in mind there's still so many other people that need to be served. And one of the things I try to convey to our volunteers, to our staff, and I have to remind myself of this all the time too, we get lost in the numbers sometimes. There's so many numbers that are out there. But the truth is, numbers are simply stories about people. And every single one of those 1,000 homes that we will have repaired, that was a single individual or family that whose home was repaired. That's a single individual or family who's now living in safe and healthy housing. Their home is now a warm and inviting environment for them to live in and really to maintain their dignity in.
Yeah.
And so
not a place that they're afraid to be. I mean,
exactly.
some of these homes are, I remember from having done this kind of work, they are bad enough that the people who live there are afraid to live there.
Yes.
And that's you should never be afraid in your own home.
No.
The 1,000th home is coming up, like you said, later this year. Did you think 13 years ago that you'd be where you are today? Did you think ahead to 1,000 homes later?
Had no idea.
No idea.
I mean, in part because back in 2006, 2007, I probably couldn't have imagined that there were even 1,000 homes in the upstate that had this need. It was something. I mean, again, I grew up here. I've been exposed to need. My mom's been in social work her entire life, and so I've encountered families that have need. So I've seen that, but just never knew the scale of that need.
Yeah, that's another important thing that we've kind of touched on is just awareness of the issue, making sure that people understand that this need exists and needs to be fulfilled. Is it going to take you 13 years to get to your 2,000th home?
I don't think so. We've really been, no pun intended, we've been ramping up what we've been doing over the past few years.
I was going to say, 1,000 homes in 13 years doesn't sound bad. Like, that sounds like a pretty good pace.
Yeah, but really, a lot of those have been in the past few years. Last year, we repaired 172 homes.
Wow.
This year, we're on track to meet or exceed that number again this year. And, I mean, these are unique homes. It's rare that we serve the same home multiple times.
Right.
Because usually we get it to a spot where it's going to be sustainable for a number of years. And so it shouldn't take us that long to get to our 2,000th. But really the reason for all that growth is the right now our waiting list, it's over 1,100 homes that are on our waiting list.
Wow.
And so, we'll be able to serve 172, 175, somewhere in that ballpark this year, but we're still only scratching the surface. There's so many more families that need help. And so that's really the impetus behind trying to grow and do more each year.
Well, and getting to that 2,000 mark and beyond is going to take people. If people want to volunteer, if they want to get involved at all, either by donating their money or their time, what do they need to do?
Well, first of all, we do need the support from the community. We've been able to accomplish this much and repair close to 1,000 homes now with the generosity of people in this community, whether it's sharing of their financial resources, whether it's sharing of their time, or many share both. A lot of the work that we do is by volunteers. Contractors are not inexpensive.
Sure.
They're a high demand industry right now. And so most of the work that we do is by volunteers. We have a little over 1,500 individual volunteers that will serve with us this year. And many of those come to us in groups. Any group can come to a project with us. You don't have to have construction experience. The vast majority of our volunteers have never really had any kind of residential construction experience before.
Right.
We introduce them how to use each tool that we use, how to do what they do. We walk them through it step by step. We have all the tools available for them, the plans already made. And so they just show up. In some cases, it's a business or a church that's gotten a group together to come and work with us. We actually work a bit with Salkehatchie groups during the summer, like you mentioned. And they come and they say, hey, we want to volunteer for a day. That's all we ask of people. It's no long-term commitment or anything. Just come check it out for a day. If you like it, keep doing it. If you don't, then find another opportunity to give back in the community. And then some of the groups we have, there's a group that I love to call Kylie and Friends. It's a wonderful woman in the community that she has a passion for what we do and she's involved in what we do. And it's not a business or a church. It's just a group of her and she's kind of gathered a bunch of her friends together to come serve together. And so, they do a project every few months. And so really any group that wants to come together, we also have a lot of individuals that work. I was just at our office a few minutes ago and talking with one of our volunteers. He volunteers once or twice a week with us and coming and just helping to make sure that all of our tools are in good shape. They're ready to go out to the work sites. The trailers are all fully stocked with what they need for a volunteer group to go do a job.
Well, and I remember from having worked with Salkehatchie, the kinds of things that you learn doing that kind of volunteering, maybe even that you could use in repairing your own home, or helping out a neighbor, so that they don't have to call Rebuild Upstate.
Oh yeah,
because their waiting list is so long.
Yeah, I was talking to a volunteer the other day, and he's been on several projects over the years with us, mostly building wheelchair ramps for families with disabilities, or putting in new steps if their steps were rotting out on the front of their home. And he was telling me about a pergola he built in his backyard. And I said, well, where'd you learn how to do that? He said, oh, just use the skills that I learned on the volunteer side. I said, that's awesome.
So learning and camaraderie, one of the two of the benefits of working with Rebuild Upstate. Again, the website rebuildupstate.org. You can find information there about donating either your money or your time and getting help if you need it or maybe somebody that you know needs it. You can get that process started on the website as well. Chris Manley, Executive Director of Rebuild Upstate and founder of Rebuild Upstate, thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
It's been my pleasure. I'm Chris Evans, and this has been Focus on the Upstate.
You've been listening to Focus on the Upstate with Chris Evans. If you would like more information on today's topic, email Chris at cevans@intercom.com.